Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is Daf Tzadi Vav. And we are up to the very first line. The last thing that we learned, just to remind you, because we're going to be continuing with this sugya today, the last thing we learned was that Rava had quoted that there were five different levels of breaking that would be nogea a kli cheres. At what point would it lose its din? We pointed out that there were actually six if you included gistera. Gistera would mean a piece that was broken, that was being used to support some other kind of kli. And because of that, when we got to the end, when Rava was speaking about the question of the din of kli cheres legabe tzamit pasil, we had a little bit of a problem in Rava. So let me just take a drink and then I'll remind you of where we're at. So the six stages that we had were like this. If something is a gistera, so it's a broken shard, the slightest hole in it, even if it's just enough to drip out, which is called motzi mashke, which is the easiest to let something go out of a hole because of the pressure, and that is enough only to destroy a gistera. And the reason is, as we're going to see today, we don't bring another broken kli to support a broken kli that's already broken. And that's already ridiculous. At this point, you throw it out. So vis-a-vis gistera, motzi mashke is sufficient. The next level is koines mashke. Koines mashke means you set it down on water and water will actually be able to go in. So that means that you don't have that pressure that you had with the motzi mashke. That, we said, was only enough to cancel the din of kli vis-a-vis the kiddush b'kli of mayim for the para aduma. It has nothing to do really with the kli being mekabel tuma. The next level up was the question of whether it's a kli in terms of separating zra'im out from the ground, so that if something is growing in it, it's considered to be a not mechubar, so it's tolush, and since it's tolush, you're able to be makshirit if water or one of the Shiva Mashkin falls on it. So for that, we said, if it's got a hole that's big enough to allow a Shoresh Katan out, then it's considered to be Mechuber to the ground, and you cannot be Makshir, because something growing, of course, is not Mekabel Hechshir Tumah, so Mekabel Tumah as well. But it's still considered to be a Kli for Kabbalat Tumah. If it gets a hole, Kemotzi Zeitim, then the standard kli cheres will be bottled, because you don't keep things around that have a hole in them of that size, unless you were meyachid them for rimonim. If you were meyachid them from rimonim, then that's the last level for being mekabel tuma. Once it gets a hole that even rimonim fall out, then we would say botla daite. And then there's an additional issue, which is that if it's nogea, a hole, which would be in an oil, a kli inside of an oil hames, which has a tzomit pasil on top of it. There's a special halacha that by oil hames, the tuma can only enter through an opening, not through a break. So over there, you would need a complete breakdown in the concept of a kli, and that would mean that it was nifchat birubo. So it was mostly broken. And we ended up saying, the way Tosafos understood it, that although the Gemara asked yesterday that there seems to be a contradiction in Rava about Mukav Tzomit Pasil, between Rava's statement that if it was Motzi Rimon, it would not be able to be shielded but Tzomit Pasil, and the other Maimer of Rava where he said it needs to be Nifchat Berubo, and we answered, whatever comes first. In other words, this is the way Tosafos understood it. If Motzi Rimon comes first, it becomes broken vis-a-vis Tzomit Pasil, can't be protected in an Ohel Hamet. And if it's that small, that Rov will come first, so then it becomes Batel with Nifchat Rubo. That's where we were up to yesterday. Omer Rav Asi, Shonim, now those who go around saying over Brises nowadays, those were called the Tana Kamei. They weren't Tanoim, but they were quoting Brises. So they say that a kli cheres, the shear of a kli cheres is bekones mashka. The minimal difference that you will have in terms of the din of the kli is only the second level, Kones Mashka, because this business of Motzi Mashka that we spoke about is level number one, that's not about a kli. No kli will lose its din kli just because it drips a little through a hole, which is too small to allow any water in if you would set it down on water. The only issue of Motzi Mashka is l'inyan gistra bilvat. If it was already broken and you're using it as a support or as a catcher for a kli that is leaking, and this itself is a broken kli, so then once it's got any hole whatsoever in it, it's no longer useful and will be discarded, and therefore cannot be mekabel tumah even as a gistra. My time are the famous words that we've spoken about so many times. Omer mazuta bereid Reb Nachman l'fisha ein omrim have gistra legistra. Nobody is that hard up for broken kalim that they'll say, oh wow, I don't want to throw out this shard. Let me bring another shard to catch the drippings of the shard. That already would be totally batel daita, and in that case, it's not considered to be a kli whatsoever. Omer ula. Now, there seems to be a machlokas between Rabbi Yossi bar Avin and Rabbi Yossi bar Zavda in Eretz Yisrael. And I'm not sure who says what, but I know that Chad Amar Kemotzi Rimon, V'Chad Omer Kishoresh Katan. Now, Rashi understands this to mean that we are referring to the question of what the din would be Legabe Hechsher. Tosfos doesn't like that. Remember, Gabi Heksher, the question was, is this considered to be Mechuber Lekarka because it's a hole that allows the kli, the shoresh that's in it to be Yonek Min HaKarka, in which case it's considered to be Mechuber Lekarka, or is it still considered to be a kli, a flower pot that does not have a hole in it? Somebody is not properly Avi. You are not muted, sir, today. Okay, so Tosfos says that can't be the machlokas because there's a Beferish Mishnah that mentions the shear of a Shoresh Katan. How could Amoraim be arguing on a Beferish Mishnah? So he explains that the machlokas over here is in terms of Tzomit Pasil, which is a little bit difficult in the sugya over here, as we'll see in a moment. But let's take Rashi's pshat right now. So it's a question of whether we're dealing with an atzitz nakuv. What would be a nekev? What is a hole that allows an atzitz, a flower pot, to be called an atzitz nakuv vis-a-vis the dinim of chibur lekarka, which would be nogea, numerous things, among which was the problem of whether it's you can be mekabel hechsher. And remember that Kabbalah's hechsher has a special category as opposed to the other issues, being the question of whether what the din would be in Shemitah, the question of how you would be kone it, or you kone it like karka, or you kone it like metaltalim, by picking it up, when of the question of whether it would be considered to be mechuber in terms of Shabbos, did you oker if you pulled something out of it, or was it only derabbanan, and so on. But it was also the question of Prusbo that we mentioned yesterday. So all of those things are one set of categories. But there was another issue that had to do with Hechsher Zroim, and that was because of the fact that the Torah was Mosif, Kol Zera Zerua Asher Yizarea, which led us to understand that we're being makbid on its being completely in a state in which it would be taken out the Zriya. So it may have a much different shear. So as I jump to conclusions about it. But in any event, Rabbi Yossi bar Avin and Rabbi Yossi bar Zavda, one of them says the shear is kemotzi rimon, and less than that, it's not considered to be a notzitz nakuv. And one of them says the shear is kishoresh katan. Once it's big enough for a small root to escape and get into the ground through the flower pot itself, it would be considered to be mechuber lekarka. And the way to remember and not to think that maybe somebody said one of the other shiurim, namely the motzi zeitim, is to realize that echad hamarbe ve'echad hamamit ubilvad shechaven libo l'shamayim, as the Mishnah says in Menachot, which is merames over here to the fact that there are only three possible shiurim that could apply here, because we're certainly not going to talk about issues that have nothing to do with the actual kli in talking about a gistra. That's ridiculous. And we're not going to talk about issues that have to do with the pora aduma, because that has nothing to do with the opening of the kli. So the only three things that would be available to us would be shoresh katan, which was level number three, Kemotzi Zeitim, which was level number 4, or Kemotzi Rimonim, which is level number 5. And over here, we went from one side to the other. In other words, the three that were available to us, which were Shorish Katan, number 3, and number 5, which was Rimonim, that's what they were arguing about. Nobody mentioned the middle shear of Zeitim. So it's Echad Amarbe, the maximum, or Echad Amamit, the minimum. Omer of Chinen Abar Kahana, Mishmeda Reb Eliezer, Kli Cheres, the shear of a Kli Cheres is Kemotzi Zeitim, and nothing else. So he argues on Rabba. In other words, on Rabba. He argues and he says, once a Kli Cheres is broken to be Motzi Zeitim, forget about it. You cannot be miyachidet for Rimonim. The din of yichud for Rimonim is only on more expensive kelim that people would be reluctant to throw out. That would be from clay eights up. That you can make into a kli if you're miyachidet for Rimonim. But once a kli cheres is motzi zeitin, as Markashi Shabarei de Rabba concludes the statement from the name of Reb Eliezer, you have to add to make it very, very clear that at that point, a kli cheres becomes the equivalent of klei gilalim, klei avanim, klei adama. And as you'll recall from Masechet Kelim, those kelim are not mekabel tuma come hell or high water. I don't care what you were miyachid them for. So what he's trying to bring out over here is that once a kli cheres is motzi zeitim, forget about it. There's nothing that you can do that will enable it to be called a kli any longer. Now, you'll remember that this is nogeya very much the question of the Rajba that we spoke about yesterday that Tosafos speaks of, namely, whether there's still a din of a gistera on a kli like that. The Rajba points out that the reason that we are able to make statements like this, not talk about gistera, and not mention the shear of gistera as a sixth level, is because a gistera is only when it's truly a gistera. In other words, you don't make a full kli that is broken into a gistera because it's really useless. You have this big flower pot that's got a hole in it. What are you going to use it for as a gistera? A gistera means a shard that is easy to put somewhere. It's got a little bit of space in it. You put it under a drip, or if you got something that's uneven, you put it under it to support it. But you can't use a full kli for that that's broken. So that wouldn't even be considered a gistera according to the Rajba. So that would fit here as well. So once they're at that point of being a klei gilolim, klei avonim, klei adama, ein mekablim tumah lo midivrei Torah velo midivrei sofrim, forget about it, zero. And when it comes, however, linyan samit patil, now over there, for something to allow tumah in through a hole in an ohel hamet, which is not the petach to the kli, because remember, when it comes to the ohel hamet, the Torah specifies the petach by talking about the tzamid patil on the opening. So over there, a tzamid patil will be able to be matzah the kli, even though it only covers the mouth of the kli. The rest of it doesn't matter, even if it's got a hole in it. It really doesn't matter so much if the hole is not big enough to be pochet rubo. And yesterday we saw the other mimer of Rava, which is that if it's kemotzi rimon, and that comes first before rubo, then that would be enough. Hadran alach hamatznia. Aha. So, we are about to get back to the shorashim of the issue of Hotzah, which so concerned us at the beginning of the Masechet, and we are about to expand our sense of what is included in Hotzah. Now, remember that back in the first parak, in the first couple of pages of the Masechet, we actually dealt with an unusual case of Hotzah. Let's remember that the Torah speaks in two places. We spoke about all this before, just reminding you. The Torah speaks in two places, one of which is Al Yetze Ish Bimekomo, that's the Biyom HaShabbat, the Gabi the Man, and the other Pasuk, which we're going to discuss today as well, is the question of whether you're allowed to continue bringing things for the Mishkan. And over there it says, no more, Moshe Rabbeinu is Vayaviru Kol B'machaneh, and insists that the Ish v'Isha al yasu od melacha l'trumat hakodesh v'yikaleya am mehavi, which means no more bringing. Now, those two psukim of bringing are talking about a person taking something in their hands, leaving their home, and coming to another rishos. We did not have any indication that you can just stretch your hand out from your home, put something down in a rishos harabim, and that would be chayiv, which, in fact, was the opening mishnah in the Masechet with the Ani and the Balabayit. They didn't move. They just put their hand out with the item and set it down in the other rishos. Where exactly that comes from was never clarified. The reason that we would need to clarify this type of thing, gentlemen, is because of the old problem. That is the concept of melacha geru'ah. Because remember, when it comes to hotzah, the idea of doing something, both from the point of view of a change in the object and from the point of view of what it is that you are doing, don't really make much sense. In point of the object, nothing was changed in the object. Why would spatial coordinates of an object have anything to do with a malacha? From the point of view of what are you doing, to say that, well, I mean, I engaged in this heavy duty, you didn't engage in any kind of heavy duty malacha. It can't be that. Because the bottom line is, if you carry something that weighs 500 pounds all day long from one corner to another corner of your house, you are not doing a malacha. And if you carry something around all day long in your Rishus HaRabim, as long as you don't go out of the Arba Amas, you also didn't do a malacha. So what the heck is the malacha exactly? It's not that you did anything really that you can measure in terms of the act. It's always going to be measured externally in terms of relating to some space, which why did that become part of the malacha? So because of that, normally remember, we wouldn't have needed a pasuk at all. The looking around for psukim, we don't do for any of the other malachas. We just look to see what was done in the Mishkan, and if that was done in the Mishkan, then that's what we're not allowed to do, and that's because of the way that the Torah puts together the Asiyas HaMishkan together with the Isser of Shabbos. So why all of a sudden, when it comes to Otsah, the reason that we're looking for psukim is because indeed we need to have an indication that this is truly a malacha. Now, the question is, once that's established, is there a tolda to this malacha? Because, I mean, when it comes normally to tolda, we have a right to extrapolate the concept of the malacha, because the malacha makes sense as a malacha. Malacha gerua, all we have is what appears to be a gzerat hakatuv. You know, so the Torah is telling us that there's such a thing as hotzah. It isn't even clear that there should be such a thing as hachnasa, which back on Daf Beis, remember, we called it a tolda of hotzah. I mean, why it would be called a tolda isn't even clear. I mean, if you're telling me moving from one rishus to another is a malacha, it shouldn't matter whether it's in direction A to B or B to A, whether you're going from rishus harabim to rishus hayachid, rishus hayachid to rishus harabim. The very fact that we would even talk about a tolda versus an av itself is an expression of the concept of a malacha gerua. But things get worse than that. And the place where they get worse, we already discussed back on Daf Dalet, when we were just beginning to explore the issues of Rishus HaYachid and Rishus HaRabim. We spoke about over there, if you recall, a sticky object. And a sticky object that comes to rest on a vertical wall as opposed to on a horizontal surface. Now, we brought up the issue over there because of our concern for looking at the definition of Akira and Hanacha from a mokum of 4x4, if you recall. And we said that because of that, it seems to be strange to find that we could have a case where something sticks to the side of a wall. Where would be the Hanacha? Because it's not gravitationally attracted to the surface on which it's at, the fact that it's electrostatically attracted is not considered by the Gemara to be a definition of where something is, because that is very much a coincidental issue. It happens to be that it's sticky. So that's not the point. We're looking for something that's universal. Gravitation, that's universal. And what causes us to see something in a place is the fact that it's going to stay there, bar any other type of energy that's applied to it, which is not true of anything else. So therefore, we were interested over there of what happens when a sticky object comes to rest, so to speak, because it's not moving. Is that called at rest? So we spoke about the case where something was within 10 tefachim of Rishus HaRabim, comes to rest on the side of the wall. Is it considered to be at rest in the Rishus HaRabim that's beneath it, essentially? And that was, we brought that up because we wanted to make clear what the idea of Hanacha was, and that Rishus HaRabim only goes up to 10 tefachim, and so on. Now, that didn't force us, even though we brought it up over there. The reason that we brought it up over there is because we wanted to figure out whether we're talking about being within 10 tefachim or being above 10 tefachim. So we brought up, agav, this Mishnah. And you're going to remember, as we begin now our perek, what the issues were over here. And there are two issues that the Gemara brought up earlier that I want to remind you, because at least subconsciously it's there in your mind. It's going to be confusing if we don't work it out again. There's a brand new type of hotzah that we're getting into over here. Two different hotzahs. We've not realized until now that one of them was as brand new as it is. And that's called zorek. Because we kept talking about zorek, we took it for granted that if you throw something, in which case your involvement in the transference of the object is merely to impart energy to it, and that certainly does not sound like it can be learned out directly from that pasuk of Ayetzei Ish V'Mekomo. I mean, my God, if it isn't even clear that we could include a case where a guy sticks his hand out and puts something down in another rishus, I mean, where would we get the idea that just giving energy to something that allows it to be transferred from one spatial coordinate to another, that would be considered to be, oh my gosh, that's really wild. So the truth is we never thought about that. And there's yet another issue, and that other issue is called hoshatta. Now, normally, hoshatta, and please write that down, the moshit, or hoshatta, as opposed to normal hotza'ah. Normal hotza'ah, if I hand something over to you and you take it from me, then the din is that I did not do that hanacha, remember? And you did not do the akira. And that was part of the first Mishnah. It was like our already kindergarten level introduction to hotza'ah. You know, you can't be chayav on hotza'ah by handing something over to somebody else and allowing that person to then, he's going to now move it somewhere. Amazingly, we're introducing exactly that concept, but it's very limited. It's strangely limited because, again, it's a malacha geruah and therefore is learnt only out of the exact circumstances in which it occurred. Now, the way that such a thing occurs in the Mishkan as part of the actual work that's done for the Mishkan is by the question of what happens, and this was all in the Parshias that we've been reading in the Torah over the past Shabbatot, what happens when we take the Mishkan apart? So we're trying to imagine what B'nai Merari did with those very heavy krashim, which were close to 20 feet high and weighed, I mean, hundreds of pounds. How did they transfer those krashim? We know that the Nesi'im dedicated these Mack trucks to the Mishkan in order to make life easier for B'nai Merari. So we need to analyze how, in practical terms, were the krashim loaded onto these trucks? Now, we understand that the situation was that they were given four of the trucks. How did they move these four trucks exactly? So our Kabbalah about this is that they would park the trucks in front of the Mishkan, two by two. They would take apart the Mishkan. All of this follows logically if you analyze the size of the trucks that we're going to talk about later and the size of the Mishkan. They were parked in front of the Mishkan. When I say in front, I mean not at the door of the Mishkan, but in front in the direction of travel. So wherever it is that the Anan had departed, that's the direction that we want to be facing. We don't want to have to back up and make a turn in order to be able to move. So we parked the trucks in the direction of the travel of the Mishkan, wherever that is. Okay, we go into the Mishkan and we start pulling out these krashim one by one. They're now handed to the people that are in front of the trucks, who are going to load them into the first truck, and they will be moved from there into the truck that's in front of that truck. And I say the first truck, the one that's closest to the Mishkan, until we fill up the one in front, and then we start loading them onto the one that's closest to the Mishkan. Now, that means that part of the Aveda, of the traveling with the Mishkan, which is the essence of the Mishkan. Remember, this is true in terms of the Aron HaBris, in which the Badei HaAron are seen as a fundamental part of the actual Kli. They're not just logistic, because the moving of the Mishkan is part of what the Mishkan is. It's not just something you do to it. And remember, it was still called the Ohel Moed, even at the time that it was traveling. We had that whole question of whether Kachim would become Pusel when we're taking it down, and so on. So, because of the fact that the engines of these trucks were not under the trucks, but they were in front of the trucks, they looked very much like these big parim, you know. So they were these big shvarim. And they created a distance between the two trucks that were closest to the Mishkan and the two trucks that were in front of them in the direction of travel. And so for all of the time that we were loading the trucks, what needed to be done essentially is that somebody or some group of people lifted up these krashim, passed it onto the next truck over the area that was left empty in order to hook up the team, which means that the trucks were parked on one side of the street in a Rishus HaRabim. They were not parked on opposite sides of the streets. It turns out they always took down the Mishkan on one of the alternate parking days. So because of that, these trucks had to be parked on one side and not one on one side and one on the other, which of course would have been extremely inconvenient to have something on one side and then to get the krashim over to the other side. I mean, obviously that would be a little silly. So we now have this new idea of passing something from one Rishus HaYachid, which was the truck A, to the other Rishus HaYachid, which was truck B, with the Rishus HaRabim in the middle, which was the place that we were going to bring the engine to hook up to the truck, but which is currently empty and is now Rishus HaRabim. This is a brand new idea that we never spoke of before, and which is present in the Mishkan in context of a concept called Hotzah, which doesn't seem to be exactly this, and nonetheless, we are including this issue as well. Now, where in the world did we expand the idea of Hotzah to turn it into an actual malacha that would allow us to say, what things did we find in the Mishkan which would fit this concept of Hotzah, and therefore include even the Hoshata from Rishut HaYachid to Rishut HaYachid, Derech Rishut HaRabim, with the absolutely essential criteria that it needs to be on alternate parking days. But that if you would pass from one side of Rishut HaYachid, one side of Rishut HaRabim, from, say, a porch to a porch on the other side of the Rishut HaRabim, you would be putter, because that would be opposite sides of the street. Amazing. So all of that is going to be the issue that we need to deal with today. So it begins our Halakha Mishnah, Hazorek Mirushut HaYachid L'Rishut HaRabim, Mirushut HaRabim L'Rishut HaYachid Chayav. First, let's just establish the fact that the concept of Hotzah includes throwing. That itself is an amazing chiddush. Now, what's more is that if you are going to throw from Rishus HaYachid to another Rishus HaYachid, with Rishus HaRabim between the two of them, then we have a machlokas. Rabbi Akiva says you're chayev. The Chachomim say you're potter. Now, remember that back on Daf Dalet, we had two ways of understanding this. Rava asked, how do we understand this? Are we talking about throwing from one side of Rishus HaRabim to the other the other side of Rishus HaRabim above 10 tefachim? And then the question would be, do I see this as an extension of the concept of Moshit? Or are we talking about throwing something within 10 tefachim? And then there's a totally different issue, because I would say, no, this is not Moshit, because it's on opposite sides of the street. Okay, so what is it? It must be that it's within 10 tefachim of the Rishus HaRabim, which means that it's still considered to be in the Avir Rishus HaRabim. And the question is, if I threw something is it viewed as at rest? Kluta kemishuhuncha. That was one of the very early munachim that we mentioned. Once something is included in the airspace of a particular rishus, we would view it as if it was settled in that area, if it was not being held and carried, and it was just moving through. So with two completely different ways of understanding the case over here, which the Gemara will once again examine. And this leads us to how to read the very next word in the Mishnah. Ketzad. What do we mean? Now, this ketzad is extremely misleading. And as Tosis points out, it only works out according to one of these approaches, because the other approach was we would learn this out from Moshit. And Moshit is a very special case, which indeed took place above 10 Tvachim, as we're going to prove. And this would be learning out Zorik from Moshit and would have nothing to do with Kluta Kamisha Uncha Damya. So the case that we bring, which is Ketzad, only is going to work out according to one of these two approaches. Excuse me. And indeed, in many places, the word Ketzad does not appear in the Mishnah because it would be dependent on how the Amoraim understood. Therefore, in the Yerushalmi, we see there is no Ketzad here. So what would be an example, let's say, but maybe not. Maybe it's a different issue. So, shtei gezustraot. You've got two porches on the 53rd floor of two buildings across Fifth Avenue. You want to throw from one to the other. They're facing each other. If you're moshit v'zorek mizulazu, so this would be going according to the Rabbanan, not according to Rabbi Akiva, who says you're chayev for going through a Rosh HaSarabim, possibly. And you throw from one porch to the other, or you pass something from one porch to the other, you would be putter. But suppose you pass something from the porch on the 53rd floor at 98 Fifth Avenue to a 54th floor porch at 105th Avenue next door. So then you're passing the way that the Levium passed from one truck to another at the time of the Mishkan. In that, that's called Diyuta Achat, one row in the Rishut HaRabim, then you would be Chayev. So if both of these porches were on the same side of the street, Shteim B'Diyuta Achat, it depends how you do it. If you pass it over Moshit, then you're Chayev. But a Zorek is not Chayev, because I'd like to see you try to throw one of those Groshim from one wagon to the other. Ha ha. So certainly a Zorek would be Potter. Shekach haita avodat ha-Leviim, the way that the Leviim would load up the Kroshim from the Mishkan, the Bnei Merari, would be they had two wagons, zo achar zo, parked, one behind the other, or actually one in front of the other, in the Rishut HaRabim, and these were two by two, actually, Moshitina Kroshim mizo lazo, they would pass Kroshim from the closer one to the Mishkan to the one in front of it, avalo zorkim, obviously, they would not be throwing the crushing. Okay, now for the first time, we find ourselves facing the issue of how do we know to include this melacha gerua in the things that we have a right to learn out of the Mishkan as being melachas. So, Michde, once we're talking about zrika, I mean, where do we get the idea of zrika from? I mean, the only way that we could have learned out zrika is by saying that, well, since hotzah is a malacha, this is a tolda of hotzah. But how do you know that hotzah is called a malacha? Hotzah gufa. Now, the girsa, if you take a look in the Mesoras Hashas, which is the girsa of Reb Hai Gon, is not hecha ktiva, where is it written, but rather hotzah minalan dahave milacha. What gives us the idea that hotzah could be considered a malacha at all? Now, the two girsaot are actually parallel, because to ask where is it written is a ridiculous question. Did we ask, and where is baking written? Did we ask, and where is leather work written? No. Why no? Because we have the general comparison of the Mishkan to Shabbat. So we know whatever was considered to be a malacha in the Mishkan is a malacha. Why are we asking? So again, we're asking because of the fact that this is not really a malacha the way we understand any of the other malachas of Shabbos. And remember, it's because of this, as we pointed out so many times, that malacha is all seen ultimately as being a deeper understanding of Hotzah, which is why the entire Masechet and the entire next Masechet of Erevin is built around Hotzah, because it's simple to talk about malachas where they're measured in terms of changes within something and involve some type of expertise that you've done. I understand that that's this very creative act and so on. For me to penetrate into the nature of Maisa Bereishis and to find within it the nature of spatial coordinates as being central to Maisa Bereishis and therefore central to the Asiyas HaMishkan is an infinitely more profound understanding of the nature of malacha. And this malacha geruah becomes, therefore, the depth of our experience of the nature of malacha. Because of that, we're asking, so where does it say that that's a malacha? So again, whether you've got Rav Haigon's girsa, whether you have this girsa, it boils down to the same question. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, the Amar Kra, well, since the pasuk says, Vayitzav Moshe, Vayaviru kol b'machane lemor, ish v'isha, Al Yasu od Milacha l'trumat haKodesh vayikale ha'am mehavi. Now, Rav Haigon stops the Girsa right here, and all of the next piece does not appear according to him, because what the Gemara has just done is brought a pasuk that shows you that the word Milacha Al Yasu od Milacha l'trumat haKodesh is a reference to bringing things. Vayikale ha'am mehavi. There's nothing else to discuss, says Rav Haigon. This girsa that we're about to engage in is ridiculous, because we do not need to say anything more than that, because the issue was, how would malacha refer to an act of bringing something that a two-year-old can do when he brings candy out of his house to eat in school? Why is that a malacha? And the Torah is calling it a malacha, and Moshe Rabbeinu is being magdar as a malacha. That's your answer. Okay. Our girsa, which has, where does it say the din of Hotzah, is from this pasuk, and therefore we ask, how do we know that this pasuk constitutes any din about Shabbos? So first let's establish how we know that this is Hotzah. Who's to say that it has anything to do with Rosh Hashanah Yechid and Rosh Hashanah Rabbi? Well, Moshe Heichan Haviyativ, where was Moshe when he told people, don't bring anything to me anymore? So where was he? He was in the Machane Leviyah. The Machane Leviyah was a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, correct? Because everybody would be coming down that area in order to have access to the Mishkan, to have access to the Bezdin, to have access to Moshe. That was the center. And he tells people, do not go out of your tents, lo tafiku v'tetu, mirushut ha'yachid ditchu, lirushut ha'rabim. Don't bring it here. And what makes you think this has something to do with Shabbat and is defining the nature of Shabbat, which again, Rav Haigon says, this is a ridiculous question, because that's not what we're trying to prove. We're trying to prove that carrying is called malacha, that's all. We don't need to prove it's Shabbos. So where exactly do we know that it was on Shabbos? Dilma Becholkoi, maybe this was taking place on a Monday? And the only reason that Moshe Rabbeinu said, do not bring any more stuff, is because they already have everything that they need, which seems to be the context in the Torah, that everybody comes running to Moshe and they say, Marbima Amlavi, people are bringing too much stuff. So vaya viru koba macha, it doesn't have anything to do with Shabbos at all. And it only has to do with Shlima Le Malacha. And indeed, we know there was no need for anything else, because after this announcement, the Torah makes the point of saying, V'amalacha haita dayam, there was more than enough to make the Mishkan. So what makes you think this has something to do with Shabbat? Because it says, V'ya'aviru ko b'machane. And it says, V'ha'avarta shofar tru'ah. On Yovel, on Yom Kippur, that is a gzera shava, ha'avara, ha'avara, is learned out from Yom Kippur of Yovel. K'tiv acha, v'ya'aviru ko b'machane, u'k'tivatam v'ha'avarta shofar tru'ah. Just like there, the situation on Yom Kippur is that it was a day that was usher to do malacha, and that was a Yom Asur, Afkan B'Yom Asur. It's got to be talking about Shabbat. Couldn't be talking about Yom Kippur because they started building the Mishkan after Mimochorat. Yom HaKippurim is when they started bringing the stuff. And therefore, it's referring to a Shabbat. I must tell you, gentlemen, I just need to share this because it's so beautiful. There is, as you know, a massive amount of argumentation about whether you're allowed to make an Erev. And this revolves around the question of how to define a Rishus HaRabim, which is extremely complex, whether or not it includes the fact that the area is in use by 600,000 people like the Midbar was of Yisrael. Rashi always talks about the need for 600,000 people, and we find many other Rishonim to talk about. The Rambam specifically does not, neither does the Rif, nor does just about any of the other Rishonim. And the question is, what right is there? You cannot, as we had before, back at the beginning of Masechet, you cannot close off Rishus HaRabim by making it Tzuras HaPesach. And therefore, all of our Erevin, if they're in areas that have 600,000 people, which today almost any little city has, you would not be allowed to make an Erev. And yet people are making Erevs left and right. And this is some of the pulmus of the very, very dramatic and angry communication between different Gedolim throughout the Dairis. Can you make Erevin or not? There is a beautiful Orach HaShulchan based on this Gemara. And he's the only one that I know of that points out the anomaly in this Gemara. The Gemara says, where was Moshe Rabbeinu? B'machane Leviyah. And the Machane Leviyah was Rishus HaRabim. What kind of nonsense is that? What do you mean the Machane Leviyah is Rishus HaRabim? Everybody was in a place where in order to get anywhere, they would have to go to Rishus HaRabim, right? So what is this supposed to mean when you say that the Machane Leviyah is Rishus HaRabim? Incredibly, he tainas that the point is this. The meaning of Rishus HaRabim, even according to those shitas who hold that it's in use by 600,000 people, is not that it was optionally in use, but that it is the center. In other words, what we see all over, that when the Gemara was describing Rishus HaRabim, it talked about Sratya, Platya, and so on. It means that the construction of cities at those times were that there was essentially a cardo. There was a main street that everybody would use. That was the way out of the walls of the city. It was the way to go to on any highway. There was one way to go that everybody needed to use. Once you've got cities that are basically broken up into blocks, each one of which has what is a Rishus HaRabim, that's not called a Rishus HaRabim at all in terms of the 600,000 people, because not everyone will use this as the area where we all walk. Because of that, the Gemara says, okay, how do we know this is Rishus HaRabim? Because Moshe Rabbeinu was in Machane Leviyah. Machane Leviyah was the only way that everybody would have to come in order to be able to get to the Mishkan or be able to get to the Bezdin. It's amazing, amazing diuk. And therefore, he says the very type of cities that are made today make it impossible for there to be Rishus HaRabim, because they're not cities by the words of the Torah. They're just like these overexpanded suburbs that have millions and millions of people, but there's no city because there's no real center. Very amazing diuk. Anyway, so he says, look, I'm saying this because I feel we need to be Malamed Zchus on Klal Yisrael. He says, somebody who would get up, it's amazing how things have changed. He says, somebody who would get up today and would say, you can't make an Erev, would be taken immediately to an insane asylum. Hayaner Shavke Mishtagea. Amazing language. Anyway, so, you know, now every five-year-old knows I don't rely on the Erev, so no longer Mishtagea. Okay, in any event, so we've got over here a situation in which Moshe Rabbeinu is telling people, don't come out of your houses to the Rishus HaRabim. So you see that there is a concept of a Hotza'ah. Okay, so Ashkechan Hotza'ah, how do we know that Hachnasa would be included? Well, I mean, isn't it reasonable? This is something we mentioned before. I mean, isn't it a svara? If the Torah tells me that transferring from one rishus to another rishus is a malacha, So Mali Afuki, Mali Iuli. What difference would it make if I go in this direction or I go in the other direction? But even though that's true, we would have to view Hotsa'ah based on the Pasuk as the Av, and Hachnasah would be learned out for a tolda. It would be a tolda only. Now, we'll discuss this. I see we're running out of time, and I want to finish the daf. We'll go back and discuss the implications of this tomorrow. Because, I mean, the obvious question is, why have we started worrying about this now and not back on daf beit? I mean, it's wild to take 90 dafim to start examining the question of something that was obvious all along. And, of course, the other issue is, we're bringing the wrong pasuk. The Gemara always talks about al yetze ish mimekomo, which is a completely different pasuk, to be read al yotzi ish mimekomo. Why are we ignoring that? Nobody even brings it up over here. Something is very fishy, and the key to the fishiness is michte zrika toldado tzahi. Why in the world are we now looking at zrika toldado tzah as being the reason for me to ask, how do I know that I have an av malacha? If I already talked about Knisa as being a tolda of Otsah. So then this is a crazy conversation. But now is the first time I think about this when I'm dealing with Zrika. All of that to be discussed tomorrow. Now let's finish our daf. Okay, asks the Gemara, who cares? I mean, what do you mean? Well, just remember, Otsah is the Av, Hachnas is the tolda. Does it make any difference? Michte. What difference does it make? Well, no. I mean, if we would call Hachnasa a different Av, then it would make a tremendous difference, no? I mean, the Nafkamina would be the Iavich Te Avot Bahadi Adad. If you did two separate Avot, or you did two separate Toldot of different categories, Bahadi Adad, you would be Machayev Tarte. On the other hand, if I point out to you that Hotsah is considered to be the Av, and this is just a tolda, then if you did both, you would only be Mechayev one. So then lo Mechayev el Echada. Now this sort of beggars the question, doesn't it? Because wasn't the question including the issue of why call one the Av and the other the tolda? Maybe we should switch it around? Okay, again, to be discussed tomorrow. Ask the Gemara, what about according to Rebbe Eliezer? He is Mechayev on a tolda even b'mokam av. So you could become Mechayev innumerable chataot for doing the same category malacha. So then what's the difference? Why is one called the av and the other one is called a tolda if really it's the same issue lahalacha in terms of the chatas? Well, according to Rebbe Eliezer, it's a matter of nomenclature. That's all. Hachta havoi b'mishkan chashiva kore le'av and hachta lo av b'mishkan chashiva lo kore le'av. Look, I mean, we're looking for the way to break up these sets from each other, right? So, I mean, what we want to do is we want to give every one of them a name. So we're going to choose a name. It's going to be a model for that set. What is the model for that set? The one that we find in the Mishkan as being something necessary for the Mishkan, that's the one that we call the Av, you know, or if we find a Pasuk, Ach Diktiva will always be the one in this case, which is called the Av. And the one that is in written Beferish, that's the one that we called a tolda. Okay, so now let's get back to the Mishnah. Hazorek arba amot bakotel lemala mi'asora tvachim. Now remember that that was the first time that we had met up with the idea of throwing something. That was back in the first parak, where it said that if it lands, it's a sticky item, it lands on the wall, it's 10 tvachim, it's kizorek ba'avir. That, you might as well just throw it up into the sky and let it sit in the sky. It's not going to be considered to be a hotzah. But if it's lamata mi'asara tvachim, then it's kizorek ba'aretz. Okay, fine. Now, so that was the first time we met zorek ba'aretz. Va'zorek ba'aretz arba amos is chayev. Where do we get that from? Zorak arba amot b'rishut harabim? I mean, that doesn't follow from a hotzah at all. We were only talking about rishut harabim to rishut hayachid, and not rishut harabim to rishut harabim. Omer Rabbi Yoshia, well, that we can learn from the Mishkan. In other words, once we've established that we're ready to call this wild idea of hotzah, transferring something in terms of its spatial coordinates as being a malacha, now we can look to the Mishkan and see what type of spatial coordinates were important there and what type of transferences were important. So now we have a right to look to the Mishkan. So let's look to the Mishkan. You've got people that are busy making these yiriyot. The way they make these yiriyot is that they have these looms and they're making these woven fabrics, long woven fabrics. Wow, 28 amas maybe, or 4 amas wide. I mean, this is heavy-duty stuff. And what they would do is they would throw their needles one to another. What? Needles? What are you talking about, man? People who do weaving don't use needles. Machatin. Orgin machatin lamalo. No, I didn't mean that. I meant the tofrei yiriyot. Remember, after we make all of these long yiriyot of the Mishkan, to cover the Mishkan, so they did a lot of work. So if they needed a needle, so they would ask the next person down the road, you throw me a needle, please. Zorki machatem zelaze. Oh, really? Oh, that's brilliant. You know that, right? You know that people were standing away from each other, needed to be 4 amas, of course, right? And they needed to borrow needles. I mean, first of all, how do you know that they weren't sitting close to each other so they could just hand a needle over from one guy to the next? No, if they were close to each other, they would end up pricking each other with the needles. So, okay, fine. Not next to each other like they're hugging. Next to each other within our bamas, I'm talking about. Now, come on, you're giving me all of these dinim and you're making them out of whole cloth. Barnell liked that one. So, who's to say that they weren't within our bamas? Okay, fine. You're right. Let's get another one. The original quote about people that were being orgeyuriel, that was right, but it wasn't about the needles. It was about the shuttles, right? So now the orgeyuriot, they would have to throw a shuttle in across the entire warp in order for them to be able to do the weaving. So what if they did? You throw the shuttle, but you keep the thread in your fingers, right? I mean, if not, the shuttle's going to pull on the thread, and that's going to make a real mess. You want to be able to maintain sufficient pressure on the thread so it isn't pulled along with the shuttle and it just unrolls from the shuttle till it gets to the other side. But the din is that if you're holding something that you threw, that it's not considered to be throwing and it would not be otsah. So that's not a good example at all. Ah, says the Gemara, but the niska batra would be the last throw of the shuttle where there is nothing else that you would just throw across and then the shuttle itself would just fly across, right? Okay, and even if it was, are you trying to tell me a loom is a rishus harabim? What is wrong with you? The area that the shuttle is thrown through is between the warp threads. That's not a rishus harabim. That's a malkum patur, in which it doesn't have a place that can be considered to be a rishus for itself. Okay, fine. So let's adjust it a little bit. People that were working on doing the weaving of the yiriyot, somebody down the line might have needed a shuttle. So they would throw a shuttle to the guy down there. Okay, here we go again. And what makes you think that they were 4 amas away from each other? Maybe they were next to each other? No, what do you mean? They couldn't be next to each other because then when I get to the edge of the material, the chefet, which is the edging, it's actually called the edging, so then I would be pulling the thread in order to tighten it at the edging and then I would hit the other guy. You'd hit the other guy. Okay. I guess these guys couldn't be smart enough to maybe alternate, like one was there, and the next one was like a little bit alternated so that when he pulled, he wouldn't bang into the other person. So and besides, this whole thing is crazy. Nobody ever borrowed anything. They didn't borrow shuttles, and they didn't borrow needles, and they didn't mishi ile mehadade. Vatanya Luda, doesn't Luda say in the Braita, what does the pasuk mean when it says ish mimalachto asher hema osim? And by the way, that pasuk is the pasuk where everybody was coming and telling Moshe Rabbeinu, stop this, people are bringing too much stuff. It's exactly this sugya. Why does it stress every individual from the malacha? What do you mean every individual? Is that important? Yes, it's important. Why? Because it tells you that every individual had a full box of tools. Everyone was completely independent. No one needed anybody else. That's the whole point. So what do you mean? They borrow things from each other. Eino osim melechus chaveru at all. Besides which, where would you come up with the din of mavir arba amas mirshus harabim milolan de b'chayev? You're talking about stam any havaran mirshus harabim would be chayev. It must be that Havara, Arba Amot specifically, where we come up with such a shear, It must be that that is a shear that we were mekabel. So it's a Gemara, Gemirila. And as a matter of fact, Amar Rav Yonah Shmuel, you know what? The Mekoshesh, it doesn't say what he did. What did this Mekoshesh do? I'll tell you what he did. He collected the wood. That's all he did. But he was Mavir Arba Amas Bershus Arabi Mavi. And that was the first time that we actually saw this taking place. B'mas Nisatana, the bride says, that's not what he did. He cut the wood off the tree. He was a Tolesh. Rav Acha Rav Yaakov says, no, he collected it all into one place, which is called Ma'amir. Okay, guys, do I really care? I mean, my nafkamina, what's the difference? You know, whatever he did, he did. I mean, the point was your chayev skila for Melech HaShabbos. So my nafkamina, oh, no, it makes a big difference. Remember, we had Rav's mimer before that Rav said, I found this secret document. It was a Megillat Starim by Rebbe Chia. The reason it was called a Megillat Starim is because, remember, you weren't allowed at that time to write down any halakhot, so people would write down things for themselves, which they had been mekabel. And I found one of these Megillot, and it says over there, Isi ben, please mute yourself, Isi ben Yehuda Omer, Avot Melachot Arba'im Chasar Achat, but you're only chayav on one of them. What? On one of them? Achat v'tulo? Remember the Mishnah says, Avot Melachot Arba'im Chasar Achas, and the Gemara's question over there was, why do we need to mention the number? And Rabbi Yochanan said, nobody ever argued on this, is that She'im Asun Kulam Elam Echad, you're chayav on every single one of them. So what do you mean you're only chayav on one? Ema enu chayav al achat. The point was that one of them is not a chiyav misa. I agree that there's 39 chataot, but one of them is a chiyav karet and not a chiyav skila, and I don't know which one. So therefore, by establishing what the chiyav skila was that was mentioned in the Torah, we would at least make certain that that one is not one of the doubtful cases of a chiyav skila. So therefore, that's Gufa, the machlokes over here. Rabbi Yehuda was clear to Rabbi Yehuda that Mavir, which is Hotza, that is the prime halacha for sure on that one, your chayev skila. So therefore, he just wanted to make it clear that's what he did, so that you shouldn't think that that was one of the ones that you'd be putter on. The Breita was pushed to them that Ksira, you would be chayev. Rav Acha bar Yaakov was pushed to him that a Ma'amra was chayev. And that's the machlokas, that's all. Mar Savar Hamid Lo Misafka, Mar Savar Hamid Lo Misafka. Each one is coming to clarify which ones would have been included in the suffix of the Megillat Sitarim, which maybe I'm not chayavan.